Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 416. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How about you?
I cannot argue. After a busy weekend, I crammed all of my WWE wrestling into about a 3.5 hour time period or so.
I actually did the same today. I had a busy 2 days of drinking and eating on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, I did not do much of the drinking. I did do some eating. I did a lot of houseworking to prepare for various and sundry projects. So yeah, not much in the way of beverage while you're working. But yeah, I did. Did you have any particularly good beverage over your holiday?
Absolutely not. It was cheap white trash piss water all the way.
Outstanding. Well, I thought that maybe you'd go with a rum and coke or something. I don't know.
There was that. There was rum and cokes. Yes. Thankfully, it was Captain. I had the good stuff.
Yeah, if I'm stuck, that is always a resort that I would never bag on anyone for. I definitely had large quantities of rum and coke in my lifetime.
Same but, here.
The Beltane beer for this week, and I can just get this out of the way. Is German Suplex, Stunt Granny owns Brewing's own German Hefeweizen. It did not age particularly well. I should really get this out of my basement. So there are some beers that age better than others. This is not one of them. So, yeah, and I'm not surprised. It's usually not the lighter beers that are better to cellar. It's the dark beers tend to be more positively affected. Let's go with it that way, with a long storage. We both tried to store all of our WWE knowledge in short time periods, and it was kind of funny that both of us ended up pretty easily deciding on Raw as the main topic. It does certainly help that they do have a pay-per-view on Sunday, and the fact... I mean, is it me or are they mentioning the name of the pay-per-view more than normal just because it's Great Balls of Fire?
I think they want to drive this home. Someone really likes it. Someone really, really is in love with that name and needs it said every 5 minutes.
Yeah, not that they don't normally hype pay-per-views, especially on This Week. But, I've just heard that a lot, because I don't normally put acronyms down for the pay-per-views either, which, that was just a pain in the ass. It's just, it isn't really that much to type, because Great Balls of Fire really isn't, it's sure, 4 short words, for the most part. I mean, Elimination Chamber.
It's 15 letters.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, Elimination Chamber probably has more, Money in the Bank. But, of course, that one's abbreviated, too, though.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my line of thought was completely off, at least initially. But who gives a care? Raw has the pay-per-view, so the show definitely got a lot more attention than SmackDown did this week. And they certainly had more going on, just, I mean, I felt like they... Did they not announce any of the matches, pretty much, for this pay-per-view until this week. That was the other thing. I'm like, man, there certainly are a lot of matches being made official here tonight.
Well, they've had they've had Joe versus Brock official for since Extreme Rules. That's gone 5 weeks. And pretty much had Reigns and Strowman for what, 3 or 4 weeks now?
If that's when Strowman came back, yeah. And now that you put it that way, I think of it in WrestleMania terms, where the undercard matches aren't always necessarily the first ones out of the gate. You get the couple of main event matches, which, yeah. as you're pointing out, pretty much the two main event matches have had more airtime and have run a significant course. And then you fill in with some matches that were going to be kind of obvious anyway. Dean Ambrose taking on The Miz, but it wasn't made official until Raw, really. And right. I feel like there are a couple others that you know you could see them coming, but I guess they just hadn't made them official yet. But let's go ahead and talk about Brock versus Samoa Joe. I'm not sure what else I can say in some ways, just because I'm really enjoying the hype for this one.
Yeah, I'm enjoying everything about this. I'm more pumped for this match than probably any match. Actually, a single match in a long time. I don't know. I'm not sure if I even remember when.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting. I mean, Lesnar has not exactly been involved in good matches recently. Goldberg, he got a decent match out of Goldberg.
That match was better than decent. Come on, though.
Yeah, they got a good. They had a good short match, and I mean, I guess that this one can really come in that vein. Really, it's going to be a little bit different. Although I'm guessing now that I think about it, Goldberg does have a little bit of MMA to his fighting style. So it really could play out very closely to how that WrestleMania match played out. Just because it's going to be a bunch of big matches, or it's going to be a bunch of heavy-hitting moves, and it's not necessarily going to be the longest match in the world, but it's going to be good because you're going to see the violence inflicted on both wrestlers.
Nope, it's definitely not going to be the longest match. That's going to go to the mid-card tag match no one cares about. Oh, man. I guess we'll die. What are they thinking? There's no way, unless the Hardys are able to pull off a win in court, which has been rumored that they were maybe days away from it, and go in with the broken gimmick. I don't see these two teams being able to hold people's attention for a half an hour.
Yeah, I don't, I guess I didn't quite get that, where it's...
Yeah, I mean, I guess I get 2 out of 3 falls didn't lead to a decisive winner, I kind of get where they're coming from with that, but...
Right.
No one's asking for this, you know?
Yeah, I just think it's continuing to be, like you said, they don't have the rights to the broken gimmick, and you can just tell again. Like Matt has continued to act like broken Matt Hardy, or at least with some little verbal tics. Like, there's no way that they've let that slide onto, you know, and I know that I've made this point before too, but, you know, they've really let that continue to happen. And I mean, I feel like they're confident that something's going to get worked out, but all of these feuds that they're involved in, and mostly it's just them and Cesaro and Sheamus, have been drug out for so long. You know, they need to keep on coming up with shit so that they can become broken. Oh man, it's kind of tough to watch.
And it's kind of, the more you put the Hardys out there doing all their old spots, trying to do all their old spots, the more you expose them, and this might go beyond exposing what the Hardys have left.
I hadn't really thought about that in some ways. Like, I'm not sure when, because honestly, what they've spent the better part of the last year not wrestling a traditional match.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That's what this is about.
Even though they're kind of, I mean, I don't think they're that much older than their opponents.
A little bit, but
like, not significantly, but they just have more mileage on them because of a lot of the types of matches that they were in. And you can tell that it's taken a toll on them.
Yeah.
And it's
Matt Hardy's bow-legged run out of the entrance tunnel is painful to watch.
Well, at least the thing with him is that he's still, he always had the more ground-based offense anyway, so his offense is aged better than Jeff's. Some of the stuff for Jeff is just like, man, like, I'm okay if you stop doing this and kind of do something else. Just, you know, the spot in the corner has got to be tough on you. The whisper in the wind. The Swanton actually is probably one of the few things that's one of the least bad things that he does. But, man, he needs to get out of having a traditional match, and this is a traditional match for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure what they were thinking. I guess they were thinking they didn't want to do a Hell in a Cell since someone has that pay-per-view, so you can't bust it out not for that pay-per-view.
Right? Yeah. No. This feud doesn't warrant it. No. So no. We're stuck with this for about 30 minutes with these guys trying to make it work. And I hate to say it, but man, when it was announced, I was just like, ugh. I was really, really looking forward to the show, and now we've added a point where it could just come screeching to a halt.
Yeah, and I guess that was one of the matches, too, that I was thinking about, that it just kind of just got announced. I'm like, oh, why did they just announce this match? Like, I guess in some ways I almost thought that the feud was over with. Not completely sure why I thought that, but it isn't necessary, but it's gonna get watched, and I mean I'm down on the possibilities, but I still think that they can at least pull something off with it. So we'll see. I think the Hardys can kind of work their way through it, I suppose. There's always a downed ref and have foreign objects in there to keep the Hardys.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, that'll be that'll definitely be an interesting one. And I'm trying to think of what other matches I really because the women's match would be the first one up, I guess, if I'm looking in chronological order here on my review. That's another one that at least it got determined last week that Sasha would be facing.
Yeah, but unfortunately there's no real heat here. Determined it last week. Sasha gets a quick win in a tag match that wasn't really all that good. Yeah, they really did nothing to really build this match up, and that's a shame.
Yeah. Hopefully, and I think we've said this in the prior weeks, that this feud kind of continues after this, just because it's had such a short on-ramp to get to Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah.
Because I do like their dynamic, and I like Banks being able to have some type of swagger back in her game, because she was out of it for so long. So, and well, yeah, I think I've said that before too. So, well, it's not exactly going with the matches that this is one of the matches you mentioned that was already set up, when Braun Strowman taking on Roman Reigns in an ambulance match. Really, both main event matches are going to have a high violence factor to them.
Oh, it's going to be... it's going to be some high violence and some intensity, some big dudes beating the crap out of each other. That's a bunch of always fun. So, no, Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns have pretty much been feuding this entire year so far. You know, obviously they've had their breaks in between. With Strowman being put on the back burner going into WrestleMania, and then injuries, keeping them apart for longer than they were originally going to be kept apart. And now they're they're back here. They've got their one-on-one and pay-per-view matches, and this is the rubber match, and it's got a stipulation to it. They've got props to use. I think they have a hell of a match. I like the finish to Raw. I like the idea of Reigns spearing Strowman off the entrance ramp through a table, boxes, and all the other crap that wouldn't actually be there. And the show ending with Strowman back on his feet. I thought that was a really cool visual.
Indestructible Strowman is outstanding. it's just one of those things where the WWE doesn't roll with someone sometimes this well. They're doing it just right with Strowman, and it's kind of funny how good of a foil Roman Reigns is for this. It helps get Strowman over as a badass, and Reigns just keeps on coming. I don't know why I thought he might not be on Raw for some reason. Maybe it's just because I was getting ready to watch another 2 hours of the WWE. But I don't know why I wasn't expecting Reigns in the ambulance. Well, actually, I was expecting Reigns in the back of the ambulance to attack Strowman. So it was enough of a change that he came out of the driver's side that it helped out.
But Strowman looked through the window and didn't notice him. So where did he come from? Was he hiding? Was he hiding underneath the dash? Where was Roman Reigns?
It was tinted glass.
Is that illegal for ambulances to have tinted?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else to add to this one in a lot of ways. Like, it's been a lot of fun. You know, Reigns working as an underdog for the first time is kind of fun to me. Just because Strowman's tossed him around like a rag doll.
Oh, that's always so much fun to watch. Oh.
And, yeah. And, I mean, obviously, Strowman just comes off looking like $1 million. Because he's tossing around the guy that everybody, all the male audience hates. And, you know, yeah, it just, it really works. I really have enjoyed it quite a bit. And I will, no matter what the outcome is, the WWE can work with it. I hope that it's Strowman, but it'll be fine if it's Reigns.
I mean, because unofficially, basically, you know, the winner of this match is getting the SummerSlam title shot.
Oh, right.
They haven't said that, but that's basically what's going to happen, you know.
Yeah, because is it the next pay-per-view after this one, or...
For Raw, Raw is on a pay-per-view against the SummerSlam.
Okay.
And that is Battleground, so, yeah. Yeah, so there's, like, 7 weeks or something before Raw guys get to be on pay-per-view again.
Oh, wow.
So they'll have a pretty long time to set up whatever they need to set up for SummerSlam. It's on the Raw end. Unless, of course, they just put it into, you know, deep freeze for about 2 weeks before really getting into high gear, which I hope they don't do. I hope they can at least have their main event, because assumingly, you know, the Universal Champion, Brock Lesnar's title defense. Presuming Brock Lesnar wins on Sunday, or well, regardless, Brock Lesnar's in the main event of SummerSlam. The Universal title is going to be at stake, even if he is, you know, challenging Samoa Joe in the rematch.
Oh. Yeah. That'd be kind of funny. I mean, if you want Strowman to go for the belt, Lesnar's got to win on Sunday, which it's kind of funny. The same people that are enjoying Samoa Joe are more than likely also enjoying Strowman, so... I think you've got to disappoint with one part if you're going to get to enjoy the other part. You know, I would think that both of them won't lose, that both Strowman and Joe will lose. I bet you it'll be one or the other.
Right, yeah. Well, no, wait.
I know they're in different matches, but...
Well, it all depends on... I mean, are they moving up their timeline that's been out there? Is Roman Reigns winning the championship from Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam?
Well, right.
We know. The end game is always Roman Reigns. That's not gonna change anytime soon. Well, the current end game is Roman Reigns. Who knows if... Well, they've changed their mind before.
it'll be interesting. I don't know. Is there anything to add about the Miztourage?
They bring down the Miz. Just being associated with them brings down the Miz. Like, he's not bringing them up. They're bringing him down. I mean, he's still the Miz, and you know, he's still got something. But yeah, I don't feel like the Miz Taraj is working.
Yeah, I guess I don't care one way or the other. It gives them something to do to be on screen. But, it always seems like when they throw these teams together, they don't have much in mind for the team. Yeah. You know, it always helps when the tag team part is at least somewhat credible, rather than being jokes. Like, if they had Dallas and Axel at least look, they don't need to be the tag team champions, but as long as they start to look competent in the ring, it certainly helps. And they're definitely not that whatsoever. So, yeah, things will, yeah, I guess it was kind of funny, though, just the attitude that the Miz had. It was a
burial. That was brutal.
Yeah, that was very SmackDown of the Miz. I'm glad that he's continued the asshole mentality after leaving SmackDown.
Yeah, but man. Yeah, I don't think Dean Ambrose is winning this match. But then the question is, where does he go after this? Choker, afraid of success. He's been called lazy, complacent. He's attempted humor and hit and miss. It's like, where do you go with Dean Ambrose after this?
Yeah,
if he doesn't win,
I don't know. I mean, he hasn't really changed the character at all.
No.
It doesn't need to be a major change, but yeah. He maybe needs to be more calculated with his craziness, so to speak. You know, there's got to be a little bit of something done to help himself out. And, yeah. I guess that's all there is to it. He's kind of been stuck in a spot for a while now.
Yes, stuck in a while, and when they found out he could do comedy, that was probably the beginning of the end for him. Because it turns into all they want him to do. And it's been that way for better part of the last year at least.
Right. Yeah, it's almost like he's kind of a high class Santino Marella.
That might be a little harsh, but yeah, I mean, yes, he's been WWE champion since, but I don't know if Ambrose has ever recovered from Brock Lesnar treating him like a bitch at WrestleMania last year.
Oh. Yeah, because that all kind of happened along with the Austin podcast.
Yep, the Austin podcast.
And that happened too, pretty much at the same time.
And being stuck with Dolph Ziggler at SummerSlam for absolutely no reason, and then losing to AJ Styles. Now, granted, Ambrose and AJ Styles did have a good feud. They got about 3 months out of that, which is pretty good this day and age, and didn't really run out of steam before the conclusion. So, I guess it hasn't been all bad for Dean Ambrose. He's had his moments, but he's definitely not where he should have been for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, pretty wild what's happened with him.
And now he's in danger of getting lost in the shuffle on a very babyface heavy roster.
Yeah, and, and that's kind of funny. I guess that's one thing I don't think about, him going heel. For some reason,
it might become a necessity, you know, in the next few months or so.
It could be the way to go.
Yeah.
But I guess I just hadn't even thought about the possibility. But he certainly needs to get away from the Miz. For him do that.
Or can you say the Miz needs to get away from Dean Ambrose? Because the Miz is the one on the ascent, seemingly, right now. You might say that he's Axel and Dallas come off like anchors to him, but he's the one more on the ascent right now.
I don't know if you can get any higher than the Miz has been. And I think that, you know, at least his end of that promo, and really I think Ambrose had a better response to the Miz's claims than he actually acted like he should have after that promo. You know, like saying that, you know, he may have wasted some opportunities and this, that, and the other thing. But the Miz just continues to scorch on the mic, and I guess that's why I'm letting the Miztourage kind of go for now. It doesn't seem fully developed as an idea.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And they seemingly have. I didn't really notice. Did Maurice show any signs of, you know, being cold towards the Miz this week, or have we forgotten about that?
That was the only thing that I did not like about this week, is they, just pretended that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought maybe I missed, you know, a look, a facial expression, a hand gesture, body language, something, you know, on the entrance, but no, I did not.
nope, you didn't miss anything, or at least I don't think you did. So
and it was really, really subtle.
Yeah. And I guess I was getting back to your point. You were mentioning the Miz being on the ascent. I guess he's just been on top for so long. I think that's one of the reasons he got moved to Raw. You know, it's still, despite the fact that the ratings are pretty much even these days. They still treat Raw like the flagship, you know, from the extra hour to loading up on a little bit of extra talent, which is one of the reasons why Dean Ambrose is where he is at the current moment. he was probably a little better off on SmackDown. Oh, there isn't much more to go through, really. I'm looking at this, and there's one thing that stands out to me. I can't believe that Finn Balor is in a feud with Elias Sampson.
Oh, this, yeah. Let's end this mercilessly quick. Or mercifully quick, or mercifully. if it's an added match on the pay-per-view, or the pre-show, or where... Because I don't know how much more they can add to the main card with, you know, the tag team title, with the two main matches needing time and the tag title match going 30 minutes. So maybe they'll do like a two match pre-show with Balor versus Samson and, you know, Goldust versus R-Truth or something like that.
Yeah, the fact that it's gone on this long, it's like, yeah, sorry, Finn, because we decided to go with Joe, we have nowhere for you to go right now.
Yeah, no, there were no heels. I mean, they decided to go with Rollins and Wyatt because of that, and then after that, you know, they were going to continue Miz and Ambrose, which they could have done, but I guess they could have moved Ambrose out completely and done Balor and Miz, but you probably don't want Miz beating Finn Balor. You want that to be the title change match, possibly. If Finn Balor is not going to get a universal title shot anytime or run anytime soon. So Finn Balor just drew the short straw. He's got, you know. Well, you know what? If it hasn't even officially announced for anything on Sunday, but, you know, match happens, you know what? We'll see what the Drifters got. At the very least.
Yeah, I mean, the gimmick is what it is. Like, it's okay. But, and it's a good way to introduce him, but it still has, like, it's not one to me that screams it has legs.
No, he's someone who, in the ring, showed nothing special in NXT.
Yeah, he seems okay. He's another guy, like, in some respects, like Baron Corbin to me. Like, he's the guy that got the call-up, and you're not completely sure why he got the call-up as early as he did, when some other people have seemingly spent more time down there.
That's the thing. I think those guys spent a ridiculously long time down there.
Yeah.
Even away from NXT TV, those are guys who spent a lot of time down there. And it was shit or get off the pot time. With Corbin, I understand because of the size, because of the look. With Samson, I don't see. I just don't see what he brings to the table. I think that he looks like a lot of guys today with the long hair and the beard and the scruffy look, you know, that's become so popular in society these days. And, you know, the gimmick, I don't know if the gimmick plays well. I don't know if a good chunk of the audience even knows the story of people who would ride to towns on trains and play their guitar for money. And, you know, I feel like nothing about it works. Really works.
Yeah, the gimmick is about as antiquated as Great Balls of Fire. It always cracks me up that he looks so much like Seth Rollins.
That's what I was trying to say. Yes, he does.
Just from the first time I saw him, I mean, it's not his fault that obviously genetically he ended up looking like Rollins, but, you know, maybe you get rid of the beard so that things at least look a little bit different, but you can't be a Drifter and not have a beard. So, you know, he's kind of locked in that department. Oh, man. Well, the pay-per-view there did get a lot of talk. There was a lot of other wrestling that that was on TV this past week. SmackDown is something we wanted to get to, but once we looked at things, there were two segments. To me, it was the opening segment with John Cena, and there was the rap battle between New Day and the Usos.
Yeah, the opening segment with the John Cena was every opening segment with John Cena he's had in the last year or so, since he's been trying to say, look, I'm not going anywhere. Look, I'm not going anywhere. Okay, maybe I am going somewhere. Because that was the funny part. It's like, I'm not going anywhere. Well, if my time here is, wait a minute.
Well, that I was just gone for. Has he been gone since WrestleMania, or was it the pay per view after WrestleMania?
He's been gone since WrestleMania. There's no real explanation as to where he's been or what he's been doing, at least in the context of TV.
Yeah, so that's one of those things that they haven't really fleshed that out. They haven't changed his argument at all. Like, yeah, unlike The Rock, he is coming back to wrestle. And I mean, he seems like more of a regular than Chris Jericho in a lot of ways. Because, like, Chris Jericho, this last run, I'm like, holy shit, he's been on the roster for a long time.
Yeah.
and other people notice that. Cena, he takes his, 2 months off, but then you see him for, like, 6 straight months or something. And then maybe another 2 months and then another 6 months. So, I mean, it feels a little more consistent than Jericho's schedule. But, yeah, his argument is a little old. I did like the idea of, although I'd like to see negotiations or something like that, into John Cena being a free agent.
Yeah, that's been horribly explained since they started running those promos. There's no rhyme or reason as to what shows he's going to be appearing on when, although it appears to me that he's going to be a SmackDown guy for the most part going forward, working the SmackDown pay-per-view. You know, just kind of a thrown together thing with him and Rusev, bringing back a feud from 2 years ago. But man, unlike the feud from 2 years ago, the Bulgarian flag being what's hanging in the other corner just doesn't have the same cachet as Russia.
Yeah, but they've kind of run with the Bulgarian brute end of things for too long now.
Yeah, it never really made sense why he was from Bulgaria, but had a Russian manager who said she had ties to Putin, and he was a super. Yeah, it never completely made sense, but it still worked because the two of them were great together.
Right.
Apart, we will see. Obviously, I don't foresee anything great for Rusev here. He's just a guy. He's being brought to SmackDown, debuting on SmackDown. Back from injury for the first time since before WrestleMania, to just be a guy John Cena's going to beat. He defeats one foreign menace to get himself ready, I assume, to have him challenge Jinder Mahal at SummerSlam. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because once you kind of lose that second match, and that being Randy Orton losing to Jinder Mahal the second time, like, they're not going to make this a short title. Well, they could make it a short title reign, but not Randy Orton and taking the title back short type of reign for Mahal. And, yeah, it was kind of weird that Rusev was being set up as the challenger, and we were questioning why he was getting segments while Jinder Mahal was taking on Randy Orton, to things taking on a completely different look than a month later.
Yeah, but then plans obviously changed. So, yeah, Rusev found himself the odd man out. He's been... I don't know when he was cleared, but he's been, left out for since the decision was made to go with Jinder, and now he's being brought back to just lose to John Cena. There is no way Rusev is gonna. That match is going to end with Rusev waving the Bulgarian flag. Once again, there is no heat there.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I was hoping, just because this has happened to Rusev at the tail end of his run on Raw, really, that he'd get something of a reboot on SmackDown. And that certainly does not appear to be what's going to happen as he comes back from injury. Which is, you know, it's just too bad. I like the guy as a wrestler. It's kind of funny. His promos are almost starting to sound too American now.
Yeah. Oh, he's just become a Southern boy down in Nashville.
So,
he loves Predators and his country music.
Yep. So yeah, I did think that that's kind of funny. Like, it was almost like he was trying to channel his old self this week. And I'd be okay with that. Well, actually, the loving Rusev was always cracking me up. But anyway, to get back to the two main points. Oh well, I'm sorry. John Cena was one of the main points, but I think that that's really about all that needs to be said about that, though. Like it like you said it. Like, it looks like he's going to be on SmackDown for now. So I hope that he isn't, you know, flopping. Cena isn't flopping from Raw to SmackDown like month to month. If they have these kind of dream feud, is probably too strong of a word for it. But you know, if they have these type of, you know, he's just taking on top guys kind of situation, even if he jobs to a lot of them. I like the idea. I just hope that he doesn't bounce between the brands too often. If he stays on SmackDown for a bit, cool. Then he goes to Raw for a bit, cool. And then he comes back to SmackDown at some point. That would work for me. But, you know, it's... Like you said, it wasn't defined at all, so it's nothing to worry about until it's something to worry about.
Right, yeah.
The other part of SmackDown that was worth talking about was, yet again, more talking. No in-ring action really to speak of this week on SmackDown. But New Day versus the Usos in a rap battle... led by being moderated by Wale. Well, I am very sorry about that. What was I gonna say? It definitely got a lot of play on the interwebs, and it got a whole lot of reaction out of me. That was one where some of the segments I just sit back and listen to and not worry about trying to recreate them on my typewriter machine. And this was certainly one that was not easy to recreate. But, yeah, the Usos continue to be a whole lot of fun. And honestly, like, this was something that I did say about that segment. If the Usos hadn't been derailed by injuries for pretty much two straight years, this feud could have been something. I mean, I guess they did have a good feud previously, but I think that injuries kind of factored into that too, though. Last go around, so I'm really enjoying this feud this time around.
Yeah, it really is. It's a really good feud. They were having fun out there. They enjoyed this. Apparently the Usos got themselves in a little bit of trouble by making the vague reference to the sex tape that was apparently cut from YouTube and maybe even Hulu.
That
got the legitimate shock reaction from everyone.
That segment was just it was really enjoyable. Like, it's hard to say that anything's Well, nah. I'm just going somewhere asinine. I'm gonna leave it alone. It was its own segment. Obviously, the comments by the Usos were more inflammatory, but I don't think you can expect New Day to go completely out of character and just be dirty the whole time that they're doing their shtick.
I mean, the New Day's true to who they were, we'll talk about the only bad part about it, the finish. There was no way out of that. I mean, there was no way to pull the crowd and not worry about the crowd choosing the Usos. So they had to go with they booked a lame DQ in a rap battle. I'm not sure if a rap battle's ever ended in a DQ before.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that was a pretty bad part of it. But that's okay. Kind of having the all-out brawl afterwards with both posses in tow works for me. And, yeah, I'll remember the good parts and not the bad parts. I will not remember who won, lost, or was disqualified.
Right. Yeah.
Because, yeah, that reference for Xavier Woods 100% deserves the win for the Usos. there were, I did refer to other things happening, this week in wrestling. There was, I still do not have, AXX or AXS.
I don't have it either. So I had to, I signed up for a week of, Sling TV. I found that screamed to be great. Actually better than some WWE Network pay-per-view streams.
Hey.
Watch it live.
Yeah, that was one thing I was a little disappointed by. I was hoping as an Amazon Prime member I would already have some type of access to Amazon Fire when I saw that New Japan was going to be streaming on there. But unfortunately I still had to buy a contraption to be able to do that, so
I may very well procure one of those in a little while, because my trusty old Apple TV's starting to show some wear and tear, and the Kindle Fire does have both WWE Network and right a New Japan World, which is the first streaming box to or streaming product to have a dedicated app for New Japan World. 999 yen, which right now the exchange rate is at $9.19, so still a very good deal. The G1 tournament season's coming, so you know, plenty of great shows coming to make your $9 worth your while. Got a little bit of a taste. I don't know how well the title G1 special translated. Maybe they could have come up with a different name for the show. Am I losing you here?
No. I guess I'm trying to think of how to. Because I'm familiar, it makes it easy to understand. You know what I mean? But it is a very generic title if it isn't explained. There's just a letter and a number.
I think part of the deal with Access was New Japan got no, because it was an Access production, New Japan got no promotional time. Except for only Kenny Omega was the only one who actually referenced the G1 tournament the whole night. They didn't get to promote their streaming service. They didn't get to promote this, you know, month of, you know, of shows that go along with this their round robin tournament concept. They didn't get to explain what the G1 was. It has been for the last 20 some years. So now, in that regard, maybe you could argue that New Japan got a raw deal from the Access side of things.
Oh, gotcha.
But you know, obviously, the exposure, the unprecedented exposure of a live event in prime time, you know, prime time on the Eastern Coast, on the East Coast time. Yeah, you know, obviously, that trumps all of that. They, by all means, Access doesn't necessarily release ratings, but it appears everyone's happy.
Yeah, well, that's good news.
I mean, it was an interesting production. I was almost surprised that on something that's airing live on American television, they worked in a 20-minute intermission both nights. Well, the second show will be airing on Access on Friday. If you had in New Japan World, you could watch the show, Sunday night show, live.
Gotcha. Hey, yeah, because I didn't, I was just watching some of the stuff that was on, YouTube already, that, New Japan posted, and, the one was just, a six-man tag match, which is, whatever, and then, the other, one, was, or the other two matches were, Jay Lethal taking on, Kenny Omega, and then Tomohiro Ishii, taking on Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah.
So I certainly did not catch the whole thing, but I caught parts of it so far.
Well, yeah. I certainly recommend catching both nights. But no, I really enjoyed. I thought Omega and Lethal was good, but Sabre Jr. and Ishii, that was for a clash of styles. You're not going to get much better than that. What they were able to do, mixing Sabre Jr.'s incredible submission game and Ishii's hard-hitting, you know, headbutts, clotheslines, chops, etc., yeah, they really worked a great match there. I enjoyed that one a lot.
Yeah, I kind of like the, it was almost, three attacks, Sabre's three attacks to Ishii's one, throughout the whole match. And
yeah.
It made for an interest. You know, I mean, they kind of established, that at the beginning of the match, and it kept on, working its way throughout the match the whole way, so it was a lot of fun. Yeah, I did enjoy that match, and Sabre just that lanky bastard knows how to he really knows how to work a submission hold.
He really does, and yeah, I don't feel like his style transitioned well, even in the Cruiserweight Classic on WWE TV. But yeah, he's tailor-made for what New Japan is doing right now.
Yeah, he's, I kind of agreed, at least with, I remember Jeremy saying he wasn't that impressed with Sabre's first round match. But the second round match in the Cruiserweight tournament helped him look a lot better, and I remember thinking the same thing. I can't think of offhand who the opponent was in the second round.
Yeah, the second round. I like this third round. Third round. Did he lose to...
I think that's when he lost to Perkins. What, did he lose to Perkins? He loses to the other guy that was in the finals.
Grandma League, yeah. Really, they do. I know they did. because I know Bush did Bush. That's right. I think Ibushi lost to Grand Metal League, and I think Sabre Jr. lost to TJ Perkins. But that might be backwards.
Yeah, I'm hunting that down here real quick. He lost to Grand Metal League.
Oh, okay, we did have a thing. Like, yeah, I think I had it right.
Yeah, you did have it right first time.
But yeah, no, he's really good. I think over the course of the two nights, what can you say about Kenny Omega? Three good to great matches in 24 hours, give or take. Okada had a really good match with Cody Rhodes. I'm not sure if I'd cross the line to call the match great, but it had great heat. You rarely see a match these days where a crowd so doesn't want one guy to win over the other.
I'm assuming they did not want Cody Rhodes to win.
Yeah, you're starting to see the internet fan, backlash against Cody Rhodes getting all these opportunities and all these companies, while in their minds, him not being up to the standard of work of a New Japan or a Ring of Honor,
I mean, it's kind of funny. He just left the WWE, and everyone's like, "Oh yeah, he's as important as he's saying he is." And I'm like, "Huh?"
I mean, he's in a great position in the business. It's almost as good as you can have it outside of WWE.
I mean, good for him.
He's
talked everyone into it, and I guess it's one of those things that he's done such a good job of recreating himself so many times, but he's never been able to run with a gimmick for a long time.
Yeah, right now he has self promoted himself to a very high level. As the song said, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Because I still don't know if he is that good. I mean, he's good, but he was always good. But putting him up against Okada after the second Omega match, and there was definitely going to be a come down. I don't think anybody expected. Anything that great. Because of the crowd heat was so strong, and because it had Egerton, I'm talking about a match we haven't seen yet, but
yeah, that's okay.
It had a very hot finish. It really did. The finish really built to a strong conclusion, building off of the dissension in the Bullet Club that followed Okada Omega 2.
Yeah, because that was the one thing when I was looking around for clips, and I'm like, hold on, wasn't everyone talking about Omega Okada 2? Why can I not find this on free YouTube? You sons of bitches. Because they have the Omega Ishii match on there. But not that one in particular.
Yeah.
But when I saw that Billy Gunn was wrestling, I knew that I was in the right place. That's bad that you're using that as a timestamp in 2017. But yeah. Mr. Ass is in still some terribly good shape.
He's definitely in good shape. He did the best you could expect or hope for. They did not change the title and try to do anything crazy off the wall. But no, he was a big American heel, and he played his part. Obviously, like, Tanahashi's badly hurt with his bicep. I know culture's different in Japan, but I have no idea why that thing hasn't been surgically repaired yet. I know there'd be a lot of off time, but Tanahashi's destroying himself.
Okay, I did not realize that he was harboring an injury at this time. But well, that's too bad because he is the matches I've seen from him are really good.
Tanahashi's excellent. I mean, definitely maybe more on the downside. Obviously they after the 2016 Tokyo Dome show, they started the process of permanently making Okada the guy.
Oh, right.
And which they've done, and right now Okada's on a great run. They got Omega right there. Once again, they definitely scored a home run here with these two shows. Maybe a combined home run. Once again, it wasn't going to be on the level of New Japan's, you know, four or five biggest shows of the year that they put on in Japan, the Tokyo Dome, and other shows throughout Tokyo and Osaka, etc.
Right.
But, you know, once again, for what they were going for, I think, you know, they really hit it out of the park. They're not planning on doing anything again in the U.S. until 2018, which you can maybe argue is a mistake, but if they actually have a strategy for attacking the U.S. market strongly in 2018, maybe it is better to wait.
Well, and they're at least going to have something of a foothold. I know it isn't a lot of traffic, but they are still affiliated with Ring of Honor, so people will be coming and going at some level.
Yeah.
So they still have some exposure, and I think, you know, a lot of fans that are paying for the network are, you know, gladly paying another, you know, $9.20 to watch some online New Japan Pro Wrestling. Like, I guess I don't know what their numbers are, but I would imagine that they're starting to get people to change their mind. Because, I mean, I've seen nothing but good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even following the storylines, and I watch these pay-per-views or special events. And I really dig them. You know, I guess I'm also one of those people that doesn't need much of the storyline to worry about it either. You know, I can just enjoy some good matches and be happy with my wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the way New Japan does it, where the matches are the story. I mean, they do their little press conferences, or they do the out. I mean, the advent of the Bullet Club did lead to more Americanized angles in New Japan as far as, you know, interference and you know, multiple man beatdowns and things of that nature. But in general, someone makes a challenge, challenge is accepted, they have the match, and the story is told on the ring.
Yeah, so, yeah, I could definitely see myself ponying up for it here if I can find the best way for my means to do so. Even if it is just kind of like the WWE Network. Well, I don't watch much more than the pay-per-views. I mean, this was something that we said that we might get to just because we're recording a day later because of the holidays. You know, NXT isn't something that I get to on a weekly basis. I try to get to it as often as I can, and I honestly just finished watching the Chicago Takeover special, and I hadn't gotten a chance. You were raving about Nikki Cross versus Asuka last week. I believe I've watched just about all of the show except for that match. And I watched this week's match. Or this week's matches, and there wasn't too much to it, because, I mean, there's another one where the main event was a whole lot of the time on the show this week.
Yeah, it was a lot of time, definitely a very good match. I like what they did here. I almost feel like they could have dragged Strong's story out to a takeover, or the takeover in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Because it seems like they're going to kind of, from here, force Drew McIntyre into a spot with the, I'm not sure if he's over enough for it at this point. Because he comes off like a dick in his promos. He's a natural heel.
Yeah, he worked better because even in TNA, like, he was one of those few spots that I'm just like, oh, okay, I can live with this. Like, that was the classic case of he got fed too much too early.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The WWE, and it just hurt him because they kept on trying to shove him down instead of gradually work him up. And on the independent scene, he kind of got this slow move up, and it certainly seemed to help with his confidence in what he right. does and says.
Yeah. He can be very good, but they definitely need to hone in on a story for him and Bobby Roode. Something that truly makes him a babyface, because you get out from that Brooklyn crowd with that many people singing along to Glorious. You could very easily have a match where the majority of the crowd is cheering for Bobby Roode if they haven't fallen in love with Drew McIntyre by then.
Yeah, just because I haven't caught much of the show, but I have caught things here and there, I guess I don't feel like I've seen a lot of Drew McIntyre around. Like, when I watched this show, it was one of those ones I'm like, oh, I kind of forgot that he was around.
That is part of it, too. He has not been a weekly fixture on NXT since his return. He hasn't really had a defined character. He does kind of these arrogant-sounding interviews, while at the same time, he's supposed to be a baby face, so there's some of those things that aren't working, but he's definitely talented enough. They definitely they got time, and I haven't really read any of the spoilers for the next upcoming few weeks, so I don't know what story they're going to tell, how they're going to get there. It's just, that's just the rumored match. It's probably the match it's going to be. I don't know if they expected the Roderick Strong story to take hold as strongly as it did, but I mean, I guess I got a little pithy on the Twitter tonight, where it's just like, does Roderick Strong have any other character traits besides the fact that he's got a family now? It's like this is two feuds now that have been built around people saying things about his wife and his kid. Because they did that with the short Eric Young feud going into Chicago.
Oh, yeah. And I even felt like it was already a topic of conversation when he was involved with this six-man match with himself, No Way Jose, and Ty Dillinger.
Yeah, there's some there, too. I mean, obviously, his wife is, or I should say that his fiance, the mother of his child, is a minor celebrity herself, who is best friends with a major celebrity. So the Ronda Rousey connection is kind of loosely there.
Oh, is she one of the Four Horsewomen?
Yeah.
Ah, did not realize that.
That's the kind of strange thing about it, is they're going so strong with this, but they're not really playing up who she is. I mean, not that I don't think, with my casual following of UFC, I don't believe her record was anything, special to speak of before she got married and, had a kid, and, is I assume kind of basically retired or semi-retired now. But no, it's the way they've gone with it.
Yeah, I honestly, they played up the sympathy angle so much. I'm like, they can't have Strong lose, can they? And especially after he kicked out of that first Glorious DDT, I was like, man, are they really going to have the title change hands at not a major event? No, they didn't. They give him some a little bit of help getting a visual pinfall that the ref, thank God, quickly corrected instead of dragging this thing out for another couple of weeks.
Yeah. But no, Strong looked good. Rude looked good. They're moving on there. And speaking of something that, well, something that can't be move on, I know I think we both are taken aback by the whole, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa situation, where they did such a strong angle to close the Chicago takeover for a guy they knew was having knee surgery. They knew was going to have a very long recovery period, and have him beat up a guy who is going to return like 9 months before him. I mean, because Ciampa's out to early next year. Maybe as late as March. That's the last I saw about it.
Okay, well, that is certainly something that I was not aware of. That Ciampa was going to be gone for that long. I'm surprised. I usually see injury news.
Yeah, I had to look it up today. It's on, Pro Wrestling Sheet and, some of the more reputable, sites that's the time, that's the current timetable. So yeah, it's like the angle was for nothing. Because Gargano's you could go back to it as soon as Ciampa's ready, but then that's 9 months to a year of Johnny Gargano being stuck in NXT while waiting for this feud to be able to continue and conclude. Because the earliest the two could have a match against each other would be the TakeOver WrestleMania weekend.
Wow, that's a long time away. Well,
Yeah,
and
it
that was
is.
one of those things that it does explain to me. I'm like, just because I did finally watch that this past weekend, the Chicago Takeover, and then I saw in this week's show that they're like, oh, Gargano's coming back next week, and I'm like, oh my God, they haven't talked about this since then?
Yeah, it was. It does seem pretty silly in hindsight to have done such a, a big heat angle involving someone who they knew was going to be out of action as the aggressor. That's the thing. If Gargano turned heel and took out his partner for 9 months to a year, you can do something with that when he comes back.
Right.
But the injured guy was the legitimately injured guy. Was the aggressor. So there's not much you can do there. Now, I'm not sure if Gargano has ever been be on the short list, say, the mini call-ups they do post SummerSlam. Because
Oh.
he's, most of the main call-ups are during WrestleMania. I mean,
Right.
I can see Asuka going up. I see, Rude sticking around as the centerpiece of the brand, maybe for a while. Really, I guess other. I mean, they can bring up whoever they want, whoever they think is ready, even if that doesn't match what you, me, or anyone else thinks is outside of the company, or as fans think is ready. But I see Asuka being there. Asuka, after she loses the title, probably is the only sure bet I as of right now.
Right.
They brought up almost everyone who was, the NXT star, as the brand was building with the launch of the network and the show having a television home and doing all the takeovers and everything.
Yeah. I mean, they are kind of dealing with the crop, and I mean, even the people that they're bringing back or bringing in, Roderick Strong has grown on me, but I still think that his ceiling is more limited than a lot of the people that they've called up now. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be as over as Finn Balor.
No, I don't think that.
You know, I don't know if it's fair to compare him to that, but I mean, they've both been around for forever, and Strong's kind of had his moments in Ring of Honor, but I think it's kind of clear why Balor was doing so well in New Japan.
And that is the thing. Roderick Strong is like the only guy who put in 13 consecutive years in Ring of Honor. He probably thought that, you know, his NXT developmental contract was never going to happen, probably, until it actually did.
Yeah. So yeah, I think there are a lot of guys that, oh, I can't believe I'm thinking about this comparison right now, but in baseball they have the there's a AAA as the top affiliate. And there's a term that someone can be quadruple A, where they're too good to really be playing in triple A, but they're not good enough to be playing in the majors.
Yeah, that might actually be a pretty apt description of Roderick Strong's ceiling. I mean, obviously having to go so much into it with real life story, and I'm still not 100% certain about the whole, you know, trailer park shooting. Like, did his mom shoot his dad? Who shot who? They show that newspaper clipping, but then it's like, there's not a lot of explanation. But they show him, you know, having a loving relationship with his mother today. Even that part of trying to build Roderick Strong's family history as his character isn't totally fleshed out. I mean, it's like, did his mom shoot his dad? And what happened to his dad? And why are him and his mom so close today? And not that I want to be judgy about other people's family history, but
but yeah, if you're gonna,
there's something missing.
Yeah,
chapter's missing.
If you're gonna bring this in, you're gonna need to at least do a little more work. Even if there's some false details. To at least give us some details to make sense of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, is there anything else to cover on all these shows?
I think we had a pretty we hit everything, and we went longer than a usual Kevin and Chris show is. Usually it takes Jeremy to push this thing to this much over an hour.
Well, yeah, there was a lot to talk about, and we at least skimmed over some of it, which would be the New Japan, and because that one was a bit a while ago, so there's no reason to get too crazy on that in relative terms. The NXT, there wasn't much going on beyond the main event. I mean they really kind of built that whole show around the main event,
they're doing that with the last 3 weeks. There are three consecutive title matches in 3 weeks. The tag titles are on the line next week with Authors of Pain versus Heavy Machinery, and of course last week tonight's match was very good with Roderick Strong and Bobby Roode, so if you haven't seen it yet, you definitely just check that out. But I think in a week where women main evented every show in WWE, and I know we recorded our usual time, so we didn't get to include this in our show that was posted Wednesday morning. But yes, right. Definitely go way out of your way to see Asuka versus Nikki Cross in the Last Woman Standing match. That match was outstanding.
I have the time to do that after. I wrap up this show. I'm at Frango11. He's at Chris Calamia. The brand is at Stunt Granny. And since I already plugged our own beer, I'm out of here. Have a good night, grandkids.
Night. Later.